Hi, this is Malia Cromer, director of the Goucher College Poll, and you're listening to the Conduit Street Podcast, a source of news and notes on Maryland politics and policy viewed favorably by an overwhelming majority of Marylanders.
Hello and welcome to the Conduit Street Podcast. Kevin Canale here with Michael Sanderson. Michael, we have a very special guest today, friend of the podcast. We're going to get into the latest results from the best political poll on the planet, the Goucher College Poll. And Michael, there is no one better to walk us through it all than Dr. Malia Cromer. She is the director of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher College and overseer of every aspect of the Goucher Poll. Malia, thank you so much for joining us today. We're really happy to have you back on.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And so Malia, just to jump right in here, the Goucher Poll has a relatively new partner. Talk a little bit about that and the value there, because I think it is a big value added for you all.
Oh, yes. So we're really thrilled. The Baltimore Banner and the Goucher Poll have now partnered on a handful of polls starting back before, our first poll was on the primary races in 2022. It's been really fun and it's been really great to work with some of the reporters directly. I mean, nobody has a better, I think, grasp on like what's going on in Annapolis is the, you know, the folks in the press corps, as well as the folks who work in organizations like yours. And so it's been great that it's been a back and forth, a mutual partnership, and it's great to be able to support local news as well. And so it's mutually beneficial all around. I think They'd say the same thing.
It seems like such an obvious match. So I think you're right. Stakeholders like us, and I think a lot of our listeners will just benefit from better information and knowledge about what's on people's minds, what are people thinking, and where are they leaning, and so forth. So I think, you know, stuff like this is great. Give us just a little flavor, if you would, about the Hughes Center and your role there with the college. A lot of folks know the Goucher Poll, but may not necessarily know, you know, what do you do for the other parts of the year when you're not making the media circuit like this?
Oh, well, I mean, so my job is basically half and half. And so I spend most of my time, I guess, like a typical week, being a regular college professor. So I teach courses on American state politics. I teach a course on survey research methods. I teach our senior capstone in political science. I do all the sort of like letter recommendation writing, and I do all the sort of mentoring and all the other things that go along with being a college professor. It's just that I have this other part of my job where we have a fully functioning survey center that has luckily for the last decade produced really high quality polls of Marylanders. And I'm very happy to be in this little niche. And I think it's really great for the college.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You have a really cool job. Both parts of your job are really cool. And I do want to get this out of the way before we start, Malia, to address the haters about polls generally. Please debunk this statement. I don't have a landline. I only have a cell phone, and polls don't ping cell phones. So this information can't be accurate because they're not getting what I think about the current state of affairs in Maryland. Can you please just debunk that myth before we even get into this?
Yes, it is one of the most commonly held myths about survey research, and it's very, very wrong. It's incorrect. As a matter of fact, 82% of the folks that we interviewed on this most recent Goucher College poll in partnership with the Baltimore Banner that we conducted from April 18th to the 23rd, 82% of those folks were completed on cell phones. Only 18 were on landlines. Out of the 82%, about 10% of those 82 were actually conducted what we do like a text to web. So randomly selected individuals will get a text message from us, and then it'll take them to a web version of our survey. So yes, landlines are becoming an increasingly small part of what we do. Eventually they'll disappear altogether.
And that's fascinating because every time I get one of those texts, Malia, even if it's not from Goucher, I always send it to you and I say, do you think this is legit? And you always say, yes, like go ahead and do the poll. But I always find it fascinating, the new methods to try and reach people, you know, regular folks who are out there. I always send them to you. It's just a habit. And usually they're legit. And so I find it fascinating, just different ways that polls are trying to reach people and engage their opinion.
Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, I have noticed at least over the last couple of years, and I can assure your listeners, they will be bombarded with this kind of stuff, especially with this new an open Senate seat here in Maryland, particularly for Democrats and particularly during the primary. They're going to get a lot of like text to web sort of polling. It can reduce some of the costs, and it's a great way, I think, especially if it's still probability based, to get a quick sort of snapshot of what's going on. And so more and more of your listeners will certainly start to get those text messages to their phones.
Well, we are super grateful to have you on the podcast this week, and especially because this week is hair on fire for you. I know, making the rounds and talking to lots of folks who are in media and in politics, because the release of the Goucher poll is a really big event for all of us who care about this kind of stuff. And over the last 2 days, you always have your sort of tactical release and two different bits of different elements of the poll. But that's why we wanted to talk with you and why I think our listeners will benefit from this conversation. So we're really interested in like getting into that stuff, but like, tell us, like, what are your goals in doing this big picture poll on Maryland politics and political interest and so forth? And then we'll start like ripping into the results. And we want to hear stuff that you find are interesting takeaways.
Well, listen, for me, you know, we've been doing this for the Goucher College poll has been around now for a little bit more than 10 years. So the entirety of the Hogan years, we have at least twice a year, we have measured the former governor. We measured the former governor's approval ratings. And of course, you know, that was like a big story from the Hogan years, was this is probably most likely one of the most popular governors in Maryland political history, at least in law, certainly in time, as long as people have been measuring things like this. Right. So this is our first look at Wes Moore. To me, that's what I was looking for the most, is like, you got to have a baseline, right? You'd have the first data point. And this poll represents the first data point on Governor Wes Moore. We not only asked just the regular approval, disapprove, but we also asked like what folks want him to focus on and where they place him on the ideological scale and, you know, whether he's living up to expectations, all those different things.
Right. And, you know, this is a really in-depth poll in terms of measuring what Marylanders think. I mean, this poll covers everything as you mentioned, Governor Moore's approval rating and what people think about him, transportation preferences, thoughts on the General Assembly, cannabis and sports wagering are obviously top of mind for a lot of folks. You name it, it's here. So, Malia, I want to get into a little bit about what your big takeaways are from this poll, a little bit about what the poll tells us in terms of what Marylanders are thinking about. And we can start with Governor Moore, Malia, because that seems like you're very interested there in hearing what people think. What was your big takeaway? What did you ask? And what did you hear in terms of the governor's approval rating and what folks think he should be focusing on?
Sure. So, I mean, listen, I spent the last 8 years measuring Governor Hogan's approval rating. I wrote a book on the guy. Part of the sort of like the Hogan story is this really careful attention to public opinion and to sustain approval ratings. And I really got to thinking to myself, like, so what made Hogan unique was the large percentage of Democrats who also supported approved of the job he was doing. And then I've been messing with the math and the back end, like thinking like, now, what would Wes Moore need to get to meet that approval rating? And how in Maryland should we be talking about approval ratings like post Hogan? My general takeaway has always been that Hogan was the exception and not the rule. And though, so for Moore at a 53% job approval rating, that is a solid place to start. And I saw a couple of people sort of comparing it. It's like, oh, well, Hogan was in the 70s. I was like, well, yes, but Hogan had to be in the 70s to have any sort of political power over the very powerful leadership of the Maryland General Assembly. Right. Wes Moore doesn't. He's on the same team as them. So a 53% approval rating, sharing the party of a veto-proof majority in the legislature, that's a pretty powerful position to be in.
You have to think that Governor Moore inhabits a place in the political landscape that it's not unique. This isn't unheard of, but it probably contributes to some of this as well. I mean, a lot of Marylanders and probably a lot of people who took this poll were introduced to now Governor Moore for the first time during the run for governor. He's not somebody who had, you know, 12 years in the legislature and a lengthy record on a variety of policy issues, or wasn't like a sitting member of Congress or a county executive or some of the stations that are frequently sort of, you know, waypoints on the way to becoming governor. He wasn't the mayor of Baltimore. Yep. He wasn't a member of Congress. You know, so a lot of people who responded to this poll probably have, you know, whatever, a 6 or 8 month window of just knowing who he is and what he's about. So he's, you know, he's building this relationship with Marylanders in a lot of ways.
I think you're exactly right. And I think it's one of the things that folks like us forget, those of us who are like really like interested in like the ongoings, or, you know, professionally vested in the ongoings of Maryland politics, that we have a level of detail and a level of deep understanding of like these individuals who are running and winning that the average voter just simply does not. And that's why it's great to take a sort of a pulse via a public opinion poll. But what we see, though, what I find remarkable, at least noteworthy, certainly, about Governor Moore here is we asked before, in October 2022, so this is in the lead up to the election, we asked people sort of to place Governor Moore, or excuse me, then candidate Moore, on an ideological scale from basically very extreme, like far right to far left and everybody mm-hmm. in between. And what's interesting is that things are unchanged. So the way people viewed Governor Moore, or excuse me, then candidate Moore and now Governor Moore is unchanged from October 2022 to May 2023. People still basically put him, the majority of folks, put him somewhere between moderate and progressive right there. And what that's a great place to be for a Maryland governor because Marylanders place themselves similarly. Most folks are, a plurality of folks are moderates. You got a mix of some progressives. And that's why you see, I think, Moore, you know, right off the bat here, this first poll, he's at 53%. Again, it's a good starting point. I don't know what his high note, like whether he's going to be able to piece together a coalition, just given the demographics of the state that boosts him up into the 70s. We'll see. But being able to maintain a sort of mid 50s to low 60s approval rating would be a great place for him to be considering the demographics and the partisan breakdown of the state.
Yeah, it's always interesting. You know, I talk to people from other states and most people think Maryland is an uber progressive state. And they look at our legislature, they look at now the governor, and they think, wow, you know, Maryland's just really progressive. You're like the, you know, Californias and Oregons and Washingtons, but we're not, right? And I think this poll and what you just said sort of illustrates that we are not as progressive as people think. And certainly Maryland voters are not as progressive as people may think, just looking from the outside into Maryland. And I always find that to be fascinating. It's a good reminder of where people are in this state. Democrats particularly are not as progressive as people from the outside looking in may think.
No, we're not. There's a couple reasons for that, certainly. And it's also keeping in mind that Maryland is one of the most diverse states in the country, particularly in terms of the percentage of African Americans who live in the state. And if you look at historic ideological sort of measures, that Black voters are not as politically progressive as their white Democratic counterparts. And I think that certainly contributes to a Maryland that is solid blue. You know, especially we can talk about the card in retirement, what that sort of means for the Senate race, but like a solid blue state, but not a progressive one. And so it is I think it's a healthy mix between shades of blue, but blue nonetheless.
So maybe one of the things that's interesting to look forward, I know you asked another question as part of the poll on the governor of relative to your expectations, do you think the governor is doing better or worse than what you were expecting from the governor? I feel like that's kind of a revealing question, particularly for a governor who's in the majority party, you know, in this state where we have registered Democrats are you know, the biggest chunk of our electorate. So I think that's one to watch in the same way that when you do like Oxford style debating, you want to see who changed people's opinions as mm-hmm. opposed to just where did the scoreboard land. You feel the same way about that question?
I do. And I think Moore becomes an interesting person to ask about expectations because he immediately became a national star the second that he was that he won. You know, he's the third Black governor in the country. And so that in and of itself is unique. But he's also certainly somebody who has all, I think, the building blocks to be a rising star in national mm-hmm. Democratic politics. He certainly has been identified as such. So doing the expectation questions, I think, is sort of fun to see, like, you know, an overwhelming majority of Marylanders voted for Westmore in 2022. He beat Stan Cox handedly. And then the question is, like, whether the expectation is sort of meeting you cast your vote. And our number suggests that, again, people view him as the same person they voted for in 2022. And he's by and large is meeting expectations at this point. Now, we're only 5 months in, and we will certainly check in on him again. But I think in terms of public approval ratings, I describe it as solid footing. And I think that's the best way to describe it.
So that's one to keep an eye on looking forward. But I know there's a bunch of other stuff in the poll that we want to talk about. So let's skip through some other stuff. I think, you know, the adult use cannabis is an obvious question in Maryland politics. The voters had their say at the ballot box, but there still are interesting public opinion questions there. And some of those you just released today. So what did you find interesting in talking about cannabis use?
Yes, thanks. So this is a question we've been asking about cannabis for years. Like it was like on our first poll, we asked about the sort of like whether they folks approved or disapproved with the legalization of recreational cannabis. Like this is like years and years ago. It's been consistently good, like in the 50s and in the upper 50s and the low 60s. And we know it passed in the ballot pretty handedly. And so like now the question is no longer whether you support legalization, but like how legalization changes behavior. And that's what we asked about. So, you know, typically most Marylanders are not using in a typical month. Most Marylanders are not using cannabis for either recreational or medicinal purposes. So 76% typical month they're not using, but 23% are. They're either using it just maybe once a month, or some people are using it every day. So looking at those, I think that's like, that's a good baseline to have. It's not everybody, but it is a large swath of folks. What's probably particularly interesting is like, there is a potential for legalization to have a modest effect on use. So our results suggest that 16% say that they're going to be more likely to use cannabis for recreational purposes now that it's legal. And 76% say that the change in law won't make any difference to me. The Baltimore Banner, and I encourage everybody to log on and check out their story on it. They did a fantastic story. One of the reasons I love working with a media partner so much is we asked folks at the end of the survey if they'd be willing to talk to a reporter. And so then the reporters will then follow up with those survey respondents. So they're getting random Marylanders. The Baltimore Banner interviewed somebody and they basically described this whole sort of, you know, I'm going to try it now. I might try it now that it's legal. And it's been really sort of great to see like the why behind the what of the numbers.
That's interesting. And so it sounds like about one in six Marylanders are cannabis curious, but most people say this won't have an effect on them, right? So one of my questions is, I mean, so cannabis illegal federally, we know that it's been controversial. How do you still feel that people may be a little bit reluctant to tell the truth about this question when you talk to folks? I mean, how do you get around that? Because we know that sometimes people don't really, even if it's a random poll and they don't know the person, or even if it's online, people sometimes hesitate because they're just concerned. Number one, it's illegal federally, or maybe they're embarrassed for some reason. But do you feel like maybe that will change as legalization kind of kicks in? And how do you handle that? How do you look at that in terms of a poll?
So pollsters are always concerned with issues like this. We call it a social desirability bias. That people want to give a socially acceptable or socially desirable answer. I would argue that in terms of recreational cannabis, or certainly medicinal cannabis, a lot of the stigma, at least in the last couple of years, has melted away. And so I don't view the social desirability bias and this question in particular to be that big of a deal anymore. It might have been like 10 years ago, perhaps, if we would ask about cannabis use. But yeah, the thing is, I would like to continue to ask the same question about how often people use it, how often they plan to use it, or if they're thinking about using it now over the next couple of years. So we can actually track whether there has been a substantive change in attitudes since the legalization. So I would say the answer is like, check back in with me maybe next year and we'll see where we're at.
Yeah. And one of the other big topics in this poll was the economy. And this is one that's pretty fascinating to me. You know, you look around and people think the sky is falling. The Fed is trying to get inflation under control. They just raised the rate again yesterday. We have banks failing. But Malia, I mean, at least the respondents in this poll, pretty similar to what people thought in 2022 about the economy, right? And that's pretty interesting to me. I would have expected people to be a little bit more down on the economy and the outlook than this poll shows.
So one of the things that I make a point to do is that we're a Maryland-based poll. So I try to ask people, like, really cue them in, like, on the Maryland economy, with the right track, wrong direction in Maryland. So I think that there might certainly be some difference in attitudes between asking about the economy, like the national economy versus the Maryland economy. Things are still going pretty well in the state. What's perhaps interesting, too, is oftentimes, you know, we're a majority Democratic state here and we have a majority, a Democratic president. And sometimes attitudes towards the economy are tied to the folks who are actually controlling government. That being said, you're right. It's interesting to point out that there has been no change in terms of like our attitudes towards economic conditions effectively from October till now. What also is unchanged is the right track, wrong direction, is that people still view Maryland as going in the same sort of general direction. They're divided on it, but more positive than negative. And so it's a good place for Maryland to be, but there's certainly some room for improvement.
And that also feels that classic polling question, the right track, wrong direction, A, B question, seems like it's an amalgamation of a handful of different things. And that's one that you watch for change, right? If 2 years from now, in a subsequent Goucher poll, that number has moved like 8% from where it is today, then you feel like, all right, something really happened out there. And that, you know, in some way, well, you know, one of the components that leads to what are you thinking about the leadership in our state, our economy, and so forth, right? That's what folks like us ought to be looking for. We have a baseline now for today. Let's see what happens in 24 months.
Yeah, what's interesting, and I so a lot of, and you certainly are public policy people, and a lot of members of the General Assembly are public policy people. And I always sort of make this joke that, you know, the pollsters, at least I'm like sort of uninterested in some of the policy details, but really interested in vibes. And this is the vibe question, like the right track, wrong direction, all vibes, like how you're feeling the state's going. But these kind of things, these attitudes are important because their vibes originate from somewhere. And it's like this general feeling that like how Maryland is doing is a reflection. It's tied pretty closely to how we view our leaders. And I think this is like an interesting, just a side note, this always gets overlooked, but you guys should appreciate this. So the Maryland General Assembly, almost half of the residents, 48% of folks approve the job the Maryland General Assembly is doing, 35% disapprove, and 16% say they don't know. In comparison to how we think about Congress, the Maryland General Assembly is wildly popular because Congress is like, that legislative body is so unpopular. It always speaks to me. It's like one of the talking points that you always hear politicians in Maryland say that like things are better than Washington, the dysfunction in Washington, but like in Annapolis, we get things done. And yeah, absolutely.
Pretty low bar compared to DC. I mean, we know how people think about DC, but it is interesting. People's view about the Maryland General Assembly and the work that they're doing. I mean, obviously, we see it more than the average person, but I think that it is a good comparison to think, hey, you know, DC is a mess, but generally people think, you know, Maryland's doing a decent job. Our legislature is okay. So you don't see those terrible numbers like you do see with national politics. So that is pretty interesting that people can kind of, you know, connect the dots there and realize that the real work is in local government, is in state government, and in DC, things are just a mess. That seems to be kind of what this poll is saying, that people sort of value their state politics in Maryland more than they do in DC, and that in Maryland, you know, and state legislatures and in local government, things get done. In DC, it's quite the opposite.
I mean, yes, you're preaching to the choir here, but yeah. I fully agree, Kevin.
I do want to get in, Malia, real quick to transportation. So I think this one's interesting for many reasons. And you ask people to give their preference on where the government should focus its spending on transportation. What did you find out? Because to me, I guess being in Annapolis and just coming out of the legislative session, this is an interesting one, and it's pretty skewed in one direction.
Well, it's been like this for a while. So what it's 51% of residents indicate that they want state government to focus more on improving roads and highways, and 29% say the state should focus on public transportation. And just for a comparison, we asked this question back in 2017. 59% said roads and highways. 35% said improving public transit. So I mean, folks are divided. The transportation question is always really interesting because it really matters how you commute, right? And so public transportation is really important to a lot of people, and it's really important for the vibrancy of our urban areas and everything. But people drive on the roads every single day, and I think that touch point is always what will always drive this number.
Yeah. And I mean, there's certainly a big push toward, you know, transit, mass transit, particularly here in Annapolis. And we see a lot of bills dealing with that. We know that they're, you know, many people are trying to direct more money to transit. And I think that's a noble cause. But it is important to remember, you know, Marylanders want to see people fixing the potholes for the roads that they drive on every single day. And I think it's just a good reminder that most people are still using their cars to get to work and to drive around, not necessarily, you know, the metro or public transit generally. So I think that's just a good sort of reminder of where people are and where they're actually commuting versus, you know, sometimes here in Annapolis, we can get caught up in, well, we should spend this much on this and we need to divert money away from roads to go to transit. And again, I understand that, but certainly Marylanders aren't there yet in terms of what they think the state should be spending money on in terms of transportation.
No, and but what I would say to the policymakers too, just as a really quick thing, is like, you should look at this number and then just consider, it's like, there's a lot of room to grow. So if you are an advocate for public transportation, you know, it looks like you still have a lot of room to make your case to Marylanders. That's how I would look at this number.
So I know, Dr. Cromer, you always put in a few items, like there's lots of these topics that are weighty public policy issues and so forth. But one of the trimmings I love is you always manage to wrangle in a couple of fun questions where you're just sort of finger in the breeze, you know, thinking about pop culture, something fun. So I noticed you asked about allegiances to baseball teams.
Yes.
So any grand revelations for the Free State there?
Sure. The grand revelation is a plurality of Marylanders, 44%, say they are Baltimore Orioles fans. 14% say they are fans of the Nationals. 4% say fans of both. 13% said some of their team. And 24% weren't fans of any team. That's what we found out here in the state.
That's 25%. A quarter of Marylanders aren't fans of any baseball team is pretty revealing. I mean, that seems pretty crazy. This is the national pastime, right? But we have a quarter of people who say they don't care. There's no team. They're not into it.
Yeah, it's them who are wrong, really.
I agree with you.
I would also agree. I love that. Anybody who responded that they prefer some team maybe further north and east of us, that they've all been lumped into other, and we're not going to dignify any specific responses for those other
That's
teams
right.
with any sort of percentage. They're just other.
We didn't
That's
even
good.
Ask. We didn't even want to know.
good. Right. And Dr. Cromer, I know we're running short on time. We're going to wrap up, but I do want to just get into one more thing. Back to Governor Moore, you asked about Marylanders. What they believe is extremely or very important that Governor Moore makes progress on during his first term. And this is an interesting one too, especially just coming out of the session. There is quite some interesting things at the top of the list and at the bottom. And can you just run through your big takeaway of what Marylanders care about in terms of what is extremely or very important to them that the governor makes progress on in his first term?
You bet. There are three top issues. Reducing crime, improving public schools, and improving the job economy and jobs. They are all 83% reducing crime, 83% improving schools, and 79% improving the jobs and economy. There is widespread agreement across party lines on these issues. So Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all believe effectively that these are the top three issues they would like Governor Westmore to address during his first term. Down the line, 77% eliminating childhood poverty. This is a goal of the Moore administration. 60% addressing racial equity issues. 48% improving public transit. That ties very nicely, I think, to what, you know, the other transportation question we just talked about. And 41% expanding renewable energy, like offshore wind. And it's really high that the expanding renewable energy, 59%. So it's pretty high among Democrats would like to see us expand some renewable energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So that does kind of line up with many of the issues that the General Assembly just dealt with in this past session: crime, public schools, the economy, poverty, racial equity, public transportation, renewable energy. Those were all at the top of the list in terms of what bills were coming in and dealing with during this past session. So that tracks pretty well. It seems like our legislators are understanding what their constituents are thinking, because again, these are the top issues that we see in terms of legislation introduced here in Annapolis. So I think that's a really good gauge for legislators to take a look at in terms of what they should be focusing on and what their constituents care about.
Yes, I absolutely agree. Sometimes we feel like Democrats and Republicans live on very different planets. And then there are these moments where you see that there is some alignment here on at least things that they would like, priorities they would like to see the governor address. Now, of course, they're going to approach reducing crime, improving public schools, and improving the economy and jobs in very different ways, politically and policy-wise. But there is at least some broad, general, widespread agreement.
Well, we know that you've got a limit on time, and you've got, I'm sure, a train track schedule for today, making lots of different appearances and contacts. We're grateful for you talking with us, and I think we had you on the podcast before and you gave us a little bit of Survey Methods 101. We will link back to that older conversation for our newer listeners who may have missed that first time around, but we'll give them an opportunity to dig back into that sort of stuff. We find it interesting, but we got to respect your time. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Bye, guys. Thanks so much. Hopefully I'll see you this summer.
Thank you, Dr. Cromer. And we will, of course, link all of the information on how to read the latest poll. Malia, can you just remind people where to find it and how folks can follow you and Goucher College on social media?
Wonderful. So you can, the Baltimore Banner has some great stories about our poll. So go to thebaltimorebanner.com. You can also see us directly at goucher.edu/poll. And you can follow me on Twitter at Malia Cromer. but be nice about it.
one of the best follows on Twitter, no doubt about it. I endorse following Malia because it's fantastic content all the time. Malia, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. We will see you soon. And again, folks, get out there, read these results. They're fascinating. And again, we'll link everything on the show notes. But we'll leave it there for today. If you enjoy the podcast, please go ahead and subscribe. That way, all of these episodes will be sent directly to the device of your choice. You can also follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and then, of course, make sure to read the Conduit Street blog. But for Dr. Malia Cromer and Michael Sanderson, this is Kevin Canale signing off, and we will talk to you soon.